So people have been asking us if we're back. I'd say we're back. Hello, welcome back to another episode of The Streaming Heap. For those of you who might be a little bit confused because you were expecting Cracking Foundation.
That foundation is cracked.
Yeah. People who joined us when we were just a foundation podcast when we first started. This is us. You're the right place. We just kind of, you know.
We had to find other things to talk about for a year.
Yeah, exactly. And we just changed the name. Same content, same two hosts, same insanity, same eerily correct predictions. So welcome back. And my name is Lynn. I'll be your host. And I have here with me Eric McGill, the unapologetic geek himself.
I am the unapologetic geek. I will be your other host.
Wow. Okay. This is a strike. Are you no longer satisfied with the title of co-host?
I'm getting together a coup. Oh, crap. I'm not supposed to tell you that.
Don't make me knock you down to assistant to the host.
You don't want me to break out all the recordings.
Oh, yeah. Crap.
I got leverage.
This is true. You have leverage. You have exhibit A through C. for those of you who are new, we are here to talk about Foundation Season 2, Episode 1, the big premiere. We're very excited to talk about it, but we usually shoot the shit a little bit and talk about what we've been watching and stuff in the beginning. Time codes in the description below and some housekeeping. You can email us on the Cracking Foundation. That's an old email that we definitely have forgotten the password to. You can email us at thestreamingheap@outlook.com. That's thestreamingheap@outlook.com with any questions, theories, abuse, whatever. We don't care. And also, if you are on any of the platforms, podcast platform of your choice, leave us a review. 5-star reviews for 5-star content, obviously. And we might read out your reviews. I mean, we probably definitely will. okay, so, Eric, yes. What have you been watching?
Not a whole lot. I've been watching Zelda. Playing a lot of Zelda for like the last, I don't know, what is it, 2 months now? It seems like it's
I've been doing that with Final Fantasy.
Oh, yeah, you got the Final Fantasy. That'll be my next addiction. I'm looking forward to that. But no, like I've been rewatching Andor, but we've already talked at length about that, so I can't really talk more about it.
Oh, go watch our Andor episodes. Andor episodes are like one of my favorite episodes of this podcast, and it's the reason why we're doing things episode by episode again.
Yeah, that's the one that really like sparked us back into this.
Yeah.
And also, it's the one show we've covered where we're pretty much just fawning over it the entire time. I don't remember us ever saying too many negative things about it.
Oh, we still nitpick because
we had some nitpicks for sure. But like, I don't know, that was the show we loved the most. So,
yes, 100%.
Oh, and I've been watching Secret Invasion, so we can talk about that because we're at episode 4 now. But before I start talking about it,
full spoilers.
So if you haven't watched it yet and you want to watch it and you don't want to be spoiled, go to the time codes below. Just skip ahead because I'm going to spoil the hell out of it.
Okay, go on.
Okay, so everybody's gone. Good. I mostly just want to talk about the fact that it was just revealed that Rhodey was a Skrull. Not because it was a surprise, not because it was a twist, just because I find it really annoying. A couple episodes ago, they had that conversation between Rhodes and Nick Fury, where Nick Fury is like, you know, he's pulling the race card. He's saying, like, help a brother out. We've fought really hard to get this far, to not be answerable to, you know, old white dudes like what's his name from Winter Soldier. And Rhodey shoots back. No, we got to try to be better than those old white guys. We can't just have another good old boys club, and we got to do things by the book. Yeah. And the reason I really, really like that conversation is because it perfectly encapsulates both of their characters. Like you see their points of view and how they have behaved throughout the show and throughout the MCU fits in with that dialogue. Like, it really perfectly works. But now we find out that Rhodey was a Skrull the whole time, and that means that's meaningless.
It demeans that conversation.
And it demeans that conversation. It demeans the point that Rhodey was trying to make. And I really, it really just gets under my craw. And it's made it really hard for me to enjoy the rest of the show, because the whole time I'm thinking, God damn it, they did make Rhodey a Skrull. And everybody knew it was going to be that. And I was still hoping that it wasn't. And I'm just mad. Just really mad.
You just hit the nail on the head about why they shouldn't make something like Secret Invasion about an ongoing universe, and have the draw be, oh, that character you knew and always trusted might secretly be a Skrull all the time. Like, that's like, that has been the draw of the idea of Secret Invasion, and I never liked it, you know.
I mean, in a like we've talked about before, in a comic book you can get away with that, that's fine, because comic books are retconning themselves all the time. But the MCU has been trying to have a distinct continuity, and you can't throw things like that and just erase a character that already exists and say that they've been in a Skrull for longer than you realize. And now you've even got Kevin Feige coming out and teasing that Rhodey's been a Skrull for longer than we think. And I just, like, it makes me roll my eyes and sigh. I don't want that. Secret Invasion shouldn't have done that. It shouldn't have gone that direction.
That's a complete lie, I bet, as well. I bet.
Oh, it's probably most, just hype. Yeah.
Yeah, at most, he's been a Skrull since before Captain America and the Winter Soldier. There's no way they're gonna go back and say, like, Rhodey at Tony's funeral is a Skrull.
Right, that would be stupid, because then he'd have to mourn him again if he's still alive.
Some people were saying, like, oh, when they rescued the real Rhodey, which is probably still around in one of those memory pods, his first word's gonna be, where's Tony? And I'm gonna be like, if that's the case, I'm gonna be real pissed. That's not gonna be touching, that's just going to be like cheap.
Yeah, exactly, that's just stupid.
But
we know Rhodey's still alive, because they're working on Armor Wars, and they've already hinted that Rhodey's gonna be like the main character. So
Yeah, I mean, like, look, the one thing I'm looking forward to is Rhodey's character might be a bit more interesting in Armor War if he has to deal with the gap of a Skrull impersonating him for a little while, you know?
Yeah, I can kind of explain it away by saying that, you know, he's got Rhodey's memories because the Skrulls can read their mind and stuff, so he would have his personality to some extent. But then again, it's like you said, it's demeaning the point he was trying to make. Because if you put that point in a villain, then automatically it loses points. It becomes, you should be seeing this from Fury's point of view. And I actually like the philosophical argument between the two and the counterpoint.
Yes.
So that's what bugs me the most, I think.
Yes. Yes, I agree. But I think this is going to be a little bit stem from, like, minutia of political differences between you and me. I kind of felt that Rhodey was also being a bit of a herb. You know, like he had some core points in what he's saying, but especially in that situation, I felt he was being like a company guy. But Rhodey has never been really the company guy. Like, the reason why he was the liaison is because he was somewhere between the reckless irresponsibility of Tony Stark and a military man who has to toe the line. But he has gone off script many times before, but that line and that philosophy seemed a little bit too much for Rhodey, you know?
I mean, you're not entirely wrong.
And I'm especially not... especially when you compare it to the speech he gave to Sam in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So that's why I hope he became a Skrull after that scene, because when he gives the speech to Sam, he was trying to convince him to keep the shield in contrary to the government's wishes. He knows the government wanted Sam to give it up, but he was trying to convince Sam, and he was trying to convince Sam because, hey, like, he was like, we need people like you, more people like you and me in this setting. Even if you feel you're underqualified, everybody out here who feel underqualified, you are holding yourself to a higher standard than other people, you know? That was the kind of tone. And now here, well, now his speech is essentially, we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard than other people.
You're not wrong. I mean, that is a good point. They do contradict each other. So you're not wrong.
But like, you're right though, philosophically, like it was kind of like a point counterpoint that was a good scene. That is the meme. Like every single deep conversation is the meme when one of them turned out to be a shape-shifting green alien.
Right. And a fanatic. And
hence,
that.
we come down on the reason why secret invasion might generally be a bad idea. But also, I want to talk about another spoiler. Two spoilers, actually, because at the end of episode 3, Gaia seemingly died.
Right.
I knew it wasn't going to stick.
Of course not.
Because they already showed
off
extremists. They already showed off extremists earlier in the episode as a Chekhov's extremist. Of course she's going to heal and recover.
And also if you watched any of the trailers, you've seen a lot of footage of her that hasn't happened yet. So you know she's still alive.
Yeah, that's also true. But even without bringing promo material into it, even in the text of the thing, it's not gonna stick. At the end of this episode, they killed off Talos. Now I have a problem with it because now there's two options: Talos is dead, or they will also bring back Talos. Talos is dead. Awful, because Talos has been the highlight of this fucking show.
Absolutely.
Ben Mendelsohn is great, and they back and forth between like the little buddy cop friendship between Nick Fury and Talos has been the best thing about this show and a great surprise by far. The conversation they had about dogs in the car, great. Something
awesome.
Straight out of classic movies like Pulp Fiction. So no, they shouldn't have killed off Talos. Talos is great. Like he's only starting to flex his chops as a character, you know,
and also thematically, it was really building to Talos eventually having to tell Fury, look, you promised us this, we got to do this. I mean, I'll stop this whole extreme situation, but we still got to deal with what you promised me. Like that's thematically where it seems to be going, and to kill Talos off just kills that. And that kind of bugs
me.
They're gonna make Gaia make that argument, but still, it would have worked a lot better with Talos.
Yes. Option two, they're going to bring Talos back, which is what I want, but also shitty because you cannot have that twice in a row.
Right.
I guess at least Maria Hill stayed dead.
Yeah, that's another thing. We've had 4 episodes and 3 of them have ended with a character seemingly dying. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of tired at this point. Like, we need to find a better way to hook into the next episode.
Yes.
Also, yes. Like, I don't know, there was something else that was bugging me about Gaia's death, but I can't remember what it is off the top of my head now. I was thinking it earlier.
They just shot her twice, shot her once and left her
and
there.
Just left, yeah, like an idiot.
Yeah. and also, like, at least they're front loading it this time, but this MCU villain is fucking MCU villains as shit, man. Like, and I mean it as an insult. Because in the earlier shows, like, it is a running joke now that MCU villains start making convincing arguments and then suddenly blow up a school, school bus full of children. Well, now they started this guy off with blowing up a bunch of things, but a lot of his arguments are still reasonable. And then last episode, they like here's the extinction of human race. I'm like, where did you get there from? We need a planet where we can be in our own skin. I would even completely be fine with when if our argument is like we've shed enough bloodshed for this world. We deserve our own nation, right? But
right.
Why do humans have to go extinct again? Sorry.
They did the same thing with this.
Home.
I feel like they did the same thing with the Skrull Rhodey. Like, you could have had a nuanced character, but then like in this episode, he goes from just being Rhodey to being like, you know, a good facsimile of Rhodey to being like just a supervillain. He's just like, yeah, I didn't just fire him. I nuked him from orbit because he deserved it. I'm like, what? Where did this come from?
Like, see, I didn't mind that much because he's talking to somebody who knew he isn't Rhodey. But you know what I mind after? When he's drunk in front of the president and when he asked an agent who has a broken hand to open the door for him, I'm like, how are you guys even good spies? Like casual observers will be like, man, Connor Rhodey is suddenly a massive dick. He never used to be like this.
True.
You guys are just really leaning in on this ability to shape shift that you've never really bothered to like try and imitate the person, did you? I think we have 4 episodes left. I kind of am excited to see where it goes. But honestly, like, now that Talos died, like, I've lost like 50% of my interest in the show.
I didn't have high expectations for it, honestly. I was just hoping for another good MCU ride, and it's delivering a good ride, but I think this is going to be one of the more forgettable ones.
Why are they introducing Super Skrulls before the Fantastic Four?
It's dumb.
Like, the whole point of the Super Skrull is like they have the fun part of the Super Skrull is they have all of the Fantastic Four's power. Yeah,
and they're like, trying to sort of give them the Fantastic Four powers with the Groot stretchiness and the extremist heat and all that stuff. But it's not the same.
Yeah, no, it's not the same. It's just like, just wait. Can you guys just wait? For fuck's sake, your rights are gonna expire. You own this shit.
Also, the main villain, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. When he's in his human form, I don't find him intimidating at all. Gravik. He just seems like a punk. Yeah, a punk. I don't get why he's supposed to be threatening. It just doesn't. I don't feel that. And now Emilia Clarke is gonna like be threatening as a Super Skrull. That just seems silly. She's a very small person.
I think I'm fine with Emilia Clarke being threatening because I don't know. Like I. A good fight choreography go a long way, and I've always found Emilia Clarke's demeanor, I think especially because of Khaleesi, like I feel like when Emilia Clarke seems angry, I'm like, uh-oh, shit's about to go down.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I'll give her credit, she's definitely a much better actor than the guy who plays Gravik. I don't know if it's the actor or if it's just the character, because he's bland as shit.
to go back to Gravik again, though, you know what's also extra fucking funny? Like, him threatening the Skrull Council. I understand why it would work in the council meeting, right? I understand why it would be like he killed one of them, didn't he?
Not in the meeting. No, he let her go. He let her walk away.
Oh, that's right. But he killed a god or something, didn't he? Like, he definitely did something terrible to somebody where they're like, uh-oh. But, like, I understand why it will work. Like, these guys are supposed to be, like, you know, like, not really war-footed leader. You know, these guys are, like, not used to combat, you know? But why wouldn't they just, like, they still command actual Skrull troops? Why wouldn't they, after they leave the meeting, be like, hey, can we, like, send, like, 80 people to go take care of Gravik, because he seems to be on a bad idea. I don't know. I just don't buy that he is the war leader now. And also, what does that even mean? Like, I don't know why. Like, yeah, like his plans about like terrorism itself is bad, but they're treating like suddenly the million Skrull that is hidden around Earth will rise up and fight for him. No, they fucking won't. They're living their own lives. Like, the people they recruited will stand and fight for him. Even in his terrorist compound, he has a rule that people who are willing to fight join the resistance, or whatever they're calling themselves, the revolutionaries. People who aren't willing to fight, they are just refugees living in their own skin. I'm just saying, like, yeah, we have to stop. There are 2 parts to his threat, right? We have to stop his randomly blowing shit up to start global nuclear war. Yeah, that part is bad. We have to stop that. But also, like, there's like an underlying, like, what about all the 100, what about the million Skrull that will rise up? Like, they won't. You don't have to worry about that.
They're not all crazy. They're not all homicidal lunatics. And
they
again,
much
his plan,
rather just live in New York, I bet.
I don't really understand his like big plan. Like, it seems like he wants to start nuclear war, right?
Yeah.
Because the Skrulls are immune to radiation. I get that. But they still wouldn't survive being blown up. Like, yeah, they'll survive the radioactive aftermath, but they're not going to survive the actual explosions.
Yes. I mean, like, I don't think he's thought that far ahead. And also, okay, best case scenario, the extinction of the human race. You've killed 8 billions of us, and now the million of you have the Earth.
Yeah, I mean, what's left? Now? What are you going to eat? You just irradiated and killed
what
everything.
Now? What's your economy? like, congratulations, you're king of a molten rock. You guys live a long time. Wait for a few generations. We'll kill ourselves off and you'll be the majority.
Yeah, as real as bad as the Secret Invasion comic, at least the Skrulls, the Skrull motivation, the Skrull plan made a little bit more sense. Like they didn't want to take over the Earth so much as just become all the leaders and just like use humanity as like their slaves, you know. Unwitting slaves, like they wouldn't know that they're being led by Skrulls. That was the plan in the comics. Yeah. That actually makes more sense than whatever the fuck Gravik is doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I started high on it. I'm still high on some parts of it, but yeah, I don't know.
I do still want to highlight, I think that the filmmaking is actually really good. It's still leaning into all those old spy movies and stuff. And that's I appreciate that.
Yes. That fight scene is pretty good.
Oh, yeah. That was
good. And also, this show need to decide whether or not Fury is awesome. Or Fury is old and frail and pathetic. Like, because they go back and forth like 3 times an episode. Because everybody keep telling that the show really, literally, it's not even subtext, keeps saying out loud how old and pathetic and lame Fury is. And I'm like, that's mean. He's doing all right. And then during the fight scene, just by Fury showing up, everything go to shit. Like, they even ADR'd in a lot of dialogue. From the Skrull side, where they're like, that's Fury, he's here, oh no, right. And then they immediately blow their like, let's pretend to be Russian cover and start using super Skrull powers. Like, I felt like I was in a situation that Gravik really needed to resort to that. I mean, you guys, Bullet can't even kill you, you didn't need the group up. But anyway, enough about Secret Invasion.
We'll talk about it again, I'm sure.
When it finish. I also watched Platonic, which is a comedy on Apple TV. It just finished. It feels like it's just going to be a one-off limited series. It kind of concluded, but I can also see them doing a season 2. Pretty easily, but they'll have to be very careful if they're going to do a season 2. They have to be very careful not undoing the conclusion of season 1. So for people who have, we've briefly talked about it before, but for people who've missed it, Platonic is like a comedy show with Seth Rogen and what's her name? The woman he've worked with before in the Bad Neighbors movies. But yeah, they like old friends who've lost touch and have lived their life. But she's happily married with 3 kids, but also like in a little bit of a rut in her life. And he's just recently got divorced and he's like an aging hipster, you know, who's still focusing on saying damn the man instead of actually doing something with his life. Well, I mean, like, that's a little bit harsh. The show kind of said it like that, but he's also like a successful brewmaster in like in like a craft brewery, and it's them reconnecting, and it's about their platonic friendship as adults of opposite sexes and the difficulties that go with it, like jealousy from spouses and stuff, but like it's never like it's the antithesis of When Harry Met Sally. Like, you know, it's never like hinted that they might have romantic feelings or anything like that. It's just that like the tension is like, is this friendship actually healthy at all, or is it more destructive than healthy, you know? But it doesn't shy away from, like, it's also realistic. It doesn't shy away that us as a society would think this friendship is weird, you know,
right?
Like, because people are like, oh, grown-ass married woman shouldn't have a, you know, grown man friend who's also like available, you know, and spiraling, you know? It's Rose Byrne. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So they. And the conclusion is satisfying. The conclusion is kind of bittersweet. It's like the conclusion is definitely like they are therapeutic to each other. Like, they actually genuinely care about each other in a way that they both helped pulled each other out of a nosedive eventually. But by the end, they also recognize that they probably passed that phase in their life where they could get together and be like completely destructive and spiral together, you know?
Right. So no, I mean, like, it it feels like that's the kind of ending the show would need, like that bittersweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. The ending, like, kind of like skip like a year or two after and like end on like them like hanging out again at a big event. And it feels like they're going to maintain, they're not going to lose touch completely like before. They're going to maintain friendship, but they both, like, it feels like they both have recognized that phase. Like, they still miss it. They're still neurotic. They're not, like, completely fixed, which is not a realistic thing in real world, right? You know?
Right.
But they've recognized that, like, their destructive behavior, their destructive friendship, they're wanting to throw back to their college days, that's not realistic or healthy anymore. And it's kind of sweet. The one downside is maybe, because it's still a comedy show and the comedies need to continue until the last episode, right? Like, most comedy shows feel that you can't just have like the finales be super dramatic. it feels that turn is a bit sudden. Like, it's built throughout it, but I feel like they go back and forth. And then suddenly, halfway through the last episode, suddenly it accelerate to a conclusion. But hey, as a comedy show, it still works. It's 10 episodes, it's fun, and it's Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen just being hilarious. And the husband is very funny as well. The guy who played Rose Byrne's husband, he was also recently in Bros as well. So yeah, he's good. He's built like a brick shit house. He would make a good superhero or supervillain.
Okay.
You guys, is that a particularly Aussie saying, built like a brick shit house?
Oh, no, that's totally, like, we say it here in the States too. That's totally a normal saying.
But yeah,
actually feels a little dated. It feels like I don't know, like 1950s slang or something.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, okay, so I think that's what we that's all we have on what we've been watching recently. So gear up, because I'm really excited to talk about Return of Foundation right after this break. Woo-hoo! Okay, and we're back. And we're here to talk about the premiere of the second season of Foundation. Okay, let's start with the vibe check first. I mean, we were excited for this to come back, right? Like, we did a go check out our recap of season one and just looking at the previews and talking and theorizing about season two episode. Like, our last episode was on that. So go check it out if you haven't. And you can sense our excitement in there. So after the first episode, what are the vibes?
I really like half the episode. I'm excited for half.
Okay,
of
fair.
It.
Okay. Actually pretty excited overall. Like, I still have some misgivings. I feel like they have recovered from a lot of the problems I had with... Well, I wouldn't say a lot. I would say they recovered from at least half the problems I had with the previous thing. I'm not down on... I'm not, like, I think I know which parts that you're down on. I'm not down on all of them completely, but I agree with you with some of them. I think I have more than half of excitement.
I think some of the problems I have, which we'll get to... it's just that, like, there's a lot of stuff they have to get past in order to get moving on the story that I want to hear. Like, so, like, yeah, we'll talk about it.
Yes, there is definitely portions of it that feels like Gil on the Raven again.
Yeah. But at least it feels like they're moving through it. Like, it does feel like they're making progress, getting us past that point. So, yeah, like I said, we'll talk about it.
Yes. Okay. So for those of you who are new, we have a tradition of recapping what happened this episode, but what happened in the episode that we're about to talk about from a special guest. What do we call him?
Storyteller Lynn.
All right. Okay. Storyteller Lynn will now take it away. So on the glorious return of season two of The Foundation, on Cynics, Gil and Harry's mother-daughter bonding hit a snag when it turned out Gil doesn't vibe with the meth cult anymore. In the Prime Radiant, the crazy mind ghost of a crazy dead metamagician gets crazier. On Trentor, the motherfucking Cleon 17th nearly got assassinated, but still had the cocksure energy and the naked ambition to try and arrange marriage with the Queen of Dominion. Demrazel then do a little presentation of a plot thread from last season, and the Cleons find out that the death of the Foundation has been greatly exaggerated. On Foundation, the vault semi-open to tease the populace about a coming war. Maybe it's just a big fucking spotlight. Maybe Harry just wanted a burrito. Who knows? Back with Gale and Harry, they embark on an ill-considered plan to raise a ship 100 years underwater to fly away from a water world that they both deliberately traveled to. The last part of that plan involved freeing a digital ghost. That digital ghost is angry. The end.
Very good, very good. Yes.
Interesting episode. Okay, so let's get our vegetables out of the way so we can eat the meat. Let's get to the part where we both clearly didn't enjoy Harry inside the Prime Radiant.
I literally hate everything about this. Like I said that in the notes, and that's how I feel. I don't like the stupid way it's first shown. You've got that like strobe light, black and white art house looking cliche as fuck, like zooming in, zooming out while he like rants and raves. And then like the idea that he's in the Prime Radiant is in and of itself stupid. And then,
when the scene started, I thought it was a Midnight Oil music video.
There you go. Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, does definitely.
He was losing his religion.
And then there's a pointless flashback. There's the Prime Radiant. It becomes its own sentient being somehow and talks to him through other characters, including Kali the mathematician, because he used some of Kali's math to formulate psychohistory. Therefore, he has the consciousness of Kali in his prime. What the fuck?
To be fair, he said you don't have the consciousness of Kali. Like it's like a conjecture, an approximation of what the AI think is the consciousness of Kali and Oyana based on their math. Yes, the Prime Radiant being suddenly gaining consciousness is like it's definitely fucking pulling something out of your ass kind of plot point. But you know what? I'm fine with it because I think I've given into the fact that everything that had to do with psychohistory and math in this show will be magic. Like when they say math, they just say magic. Just do that exchange in your brain automatically, and I think you'll enjoy this show a lot better, dear listeners. Like when they say math, they think magic and think the force. When they say psychohistory, think the force.
Like I said in the recap, yeah, the book Foundation, the whole series, isn't as hard science as it could be. It does lean into fantasy, but this is like a whole different level of fantasy. This is absurd to me.
I don't care. They like this thing is a lot of math in it, and somehow it grew consciousness. I'm like, it's fine. Like, you know, I like that movie where a jet plane got hit by lightning and become AI. So I don't give a shit.
You know, I can talk a lot of shit, but I do like Ghost in the Shell. And that's basically about the internet becoming conscious. So
true. True. But you're right. The flashback is stupid. Like, I don't understand. Like, we already have a genius who wasn't recognized by their family or their community. Why do we need to have another one? Like, his dad is just a dick for no reason.
What the fuck was that? It's like, I paid for that book, slap. Like, okay, great. So he's got daddy issues.
I know. I know abusive people don't have reason. Abusive people are just abusive. But in the context of the show, the way it's presented, yeah, like they're also clearly not going to spend any more real time developing that aspect. Like, there's no way. But they just like, oh yeah, his daddy was a dick. I'm like, all right, like what? Like, what does it serve to the story? Like, we already accept that Harry is like kind of like a mad genius. I feel like you don't need to fill it in. Like I said, I don't mind Prime Radiant as a character, but what I immediately hated was as soon as the scene start, I'm like, oh, he's in the Prime Radiant, because the set looks like the inside of the Prime Radiant.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh no, they're gonna make like 5 episodes of where is Harry going crazy? And then it's just going to be me and Eric yelling every episode, he's in the Prime Radiant. But no, they immediately reveal that he's in the Prime Radiant. No, and
see, that's what I was talking about.
By the end of the episode, he's out of the Prime Radiant.
That's one of the things I was talking about. The things that really bug me, it feels like they're getting it out of the way. Like, it feels like they're doing this because they have to do it, and then we're going to move forward. So a lot of the reservations I have about this episode, I'm hoping will go away.
Yes. But I were like, I know we're jumping straight to the end of the episode, but this cliffhanger make no sense. Oh no, the hologram's angry.
It's gonna try to hit me and that won't do anything.
I know the tension they're trying to set up is that, like, oh, he might not help them escape. He's angry enough that he might take control of, like, when they give him control of the ship to get the necessary help they need, he might not help them. I'm like, then he would also die.
I also want to point out
a hologram with goals. Like, for those goals, he need people to help him. So
true. I also want to highlight some, like, a really lazy writing trick where, like, they only need him because there's a fault, period. That's all she says. There's a fault that needs to be repaired and only the computer can do it or something. Like, where the fuck did that come? You had all these other problems with the ship that you've already highlighted and explained. Why do you have to throw in something extra that you just call it a fault? That's just lazy. That's really stupid.
At least Star Trek bothered to give us, like, oh, there's something wrong with the thingamajig and the thingamabob.
Yeah, you know, give me like 5 or 6 lines of technobabble and I'm okay with it.
And also, like, that ship is not gonna fly. Come on. Like, I know it's gonna fly because the plot required it to fly, but that ship has been underwater for God knows how long. And Gale is like, the beggar is a tough little ship. You know, it will, I mean, there's a hole in the hull.
I know,
all of its electronics being underwater.
They just kind of explain, they kind of like brush it off like there's a big hole. Oh yeah, we fixed the hole. How? are we gonna talk about that? No? Okay, moving on, I guess.
Anyway, let's actually talk about the main stupid writing trick to get what they want, which is Gale trapped him in the Prime Radiant. How?
Yeah. Why? How? Like, A, how would... okay. She doesn't know, like, how the Prime Radiant works. She didn't know how the whole consciousness thing works. How is she going to know to mix the two? Like, what? Did
airdrop.
She put the chip inside the Prime Radiant? What the fuck?
She used airdrop.
I don't get that.
And
one.
Also, why does she need to trap him in the Prime Radiant? It's not like he was supposed to, he was going to come out of the dagger ship, that he was already in. Like, does she think, like, the dagger's going to, like, float in the night and stab her in the back? Like, on the Raven, she needed to plug that shit into a slot for him to come out at all. I don't understand why she needed to trap him in a separate place.
And also, without it being plugged into a computer, how has Harry been, like, conscious this whole time? Like, how has he been, you know, existing?
Like, well, I always consider the Prime Radiant to have internal power.
Well, the Prime Radiant,
but I don't
itself,
know about the fucking dagger.
Yeah.
But also, like, I'm playing, like, I know these are things that need nitpicking, so I'm nitpicking. I don't really give a shit. Like, when they said Gil trapped him in the Prime Radiant, like, I laugh because I'm like, that's so stupid. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, while you're sleeping, I trapped him in the Prime Radiant. Okay.
I And also, I really need to laugh at the little... the little roof and a ramp that is the only thing available on this entire planet. also conveniently, you know, a nice little set you can build in front of a green screen.
It is a very convenient set.
Like, to be fair, like, the reason I'm not coming down this hard is because this is a decision they made in season one, which was an ill-fated decision, but I'm going to forgive them for like pulling it out of there pretty quickly.
Well, you know? I mean, this actually leans in perfectly to what I wanted to say about this Gale and Salvor subplot. When I was in high school, I had this group of nerds like me who were writers. And in our writing group, we had this thing where you take a story, like I would write, say, 2 pages of a story, and then I'd pass it off to the next person, and they'd write 2 pages and then pass it off to the next person.
Exquisite corpse.
Yeah, exquisite corpse. And that's kind of what this feels like. It feels like somebody wrote something and wrote the story into a cul-de-sac, and the next person just had to fix it. That's this entire subplot feels like that. It feels like just undoing everything that was done at the end of season one just to move the story forward, because they can't move the story forward in the position that they're in. That's what this whole subplot feels like to me.
Yes. And the reason is because they didn't know which planet they wanted these two to end up on in season two at the conclusion of season one yet. Because if they did, the only thing they needed to do is for Gale to go, well, I'm fucking off out of here. I'm going back to Cynix, which is fine. Like, it's a stupid decision. She can make that decision. But
well, she wanted to go home. I can accept Gale going to Cynix.
Yes.
It's Salvor that I'd never understood.
Yes. But the end of season one should have been Salvor saying, like, I think I need to go to this planet, a random planet that they're going to go to next in season two, and be like, I think like my psychic abilities are saying I have to go to this planet. And then she get there and she discovered Gale after crashing the bagger, because Gale's pod has veered off course and landed on this planet. That should be the beginning of season two. But
that would have
hindsight
been neither,
is... Yeah, hindsight is, you know, 50-50, 20-20, or whatever. I don't know. What's a good vision? Hindsight is 20-20. Okay, so I was talking to a friend of mine, and they also have the same complaint that you do seem to have about Gale's sudden 180 about the Foundation. Take me through it.
Like, okay, in the end of the last season, when she leaves Harry, she's fucking done with the Foundation. She's done with Harry. And in this episode, she even says that at the beginning. She's like, I'm done with this. I don't want any part of this. And then all of a sudden, she opens up the Prime Radiant. It's like, okay, this is what we have to fix. We have to do this and that, or else it's eternal darkness. We got to get moving. Like, what? Like, she just like did a complete 180 without any, like, no gradient, no change of heart, no dialogue to announce why she's changed her mind so dramatically and so quickly. And again, I get it. We have to move the story forward. She has to change. She can't be anti-Foundation and be part of the Foundation. You know, I get it. But like, it comes out of left field. It comes out of nowhere to me. And I don't like that.
Okay. Counterpoint / slight devil's advocate, and I did this to my friend as well. I know it's quick, like that. I feel like there needed to be another conversation between Gil and Salvor between the two scenes, but I never felt that she was done with the Foundation. I felt that she was done with Harry and Harry's Foundation. She knew the math was real. She has like the math. She's a mathematician. For her, the math itself doesn't have an agenda, right? Harry has an agenda. She's done with Harry. She trapped him in the Radiant. And she, if unprompted by Salvor, maybe she also would have been done with the psychohistory itself. If she crash landed on a planet that actually has life, maybe she would have just happily lived there. I don't know.
Well, but when she left Harry... In the first season, she had come to the conclusion that everything she understood about psychohistory was at least partially a lie. The math was unfinished. That was the first thing that bugged her about it. That's when she started to lose faith. And then when she's talking to Harry the hologram, he's revealing all these things that he lied to her about, like his own death and all this stuff. And so she's basically lost faith in psychohistory at this point. And she knows that. According to Harry, the math says that he's got to go here, and she's just done. She doesn't want to deal with that shit anymore. She wants to go home. I feel like you can connect the dots from there to where she ends this episode. I just feel like they don't do enough time. They don't actually connect those dots.
I just feel more like without Harry there, with a little bit of more of a distance, I think it's more that she's lost touch. She lost faith in Harry, not necessarily psychohistory, because some of the meth is still her own as well, you know?
But like I said, she was already starting to lose faith before she ever left the foundation. Yeah. She was already questioning the holes in the math and what Harry had told them and, you know, stuff like that. She was already doubting. So
yes. But she knows. Well, also, like, we also know that they've had conversations off screen, right? Because she knows all the everything about the first crisis and stuff.
Yeah, they obviously talked to each other and filled each other in on their backstories. Yes, we didn't need to hear any of that. I feel like we should have seen more of was Gale, like, you know, mourning Synax, realizing that, you know, talking about how everybody she knew is that this is a conversation they have later. Yeah. But they should have had it sooner so that she could reconcile the fact that the only thing she has left is the foundation, is the math. Like, if you can square that circle, it makes sense. They just didn't do it in that order, you know?
But I also think you said it's fine that the conversation about the first crisis happened off screen. But I also wonder if they should have made it on screen, because I could also buy the theory that Selvor telling her about the first crisis and how Selvor had to solve it and how it nearly went wrong has actually restored her faith in the math, at least the math a little bit, because it happened like that. Harry predicted it, the first thing happened, and she needed to be there. It's only by happenstance that Selvor managed to solve it, because of she has a lot of the similar ability that
she has, that chosen one gene.
Which I don't like, but whatever, I'll go with it. So and they do kind of pay lip service to it, like in when they're talking about having talked about the first crisis, she is dying to say, like, she's like, oh, like, you guys almost didn't survive it. You only survived it because you were there. I was supposed to be there. Like I don't know. Like, Gale always seemed to be a caring person, and knowing that like. The first crisis did happen, but it almost went wrong because she wasn't there. I can see how she would be roped back into the foundation psychohistory bullshit.
Yeah, like, you can rationalize it and you can explain it. I just feel like you don't see that on screen.
Yes. Yes. That's why maybe we should have had a conversation where Gale is telling Selva all about exactly why she lost faith in Harry, and Selva is saying, like, but Harry was right. The first crisis did happen exactly the way he said. You know, that conversation maybe should have been on screen. Also, you wrote in, how does Selva know how to fish?
Terminus, you know, doesn't seem to have a lot of water.
No, but I'm completely fine. But you know why? Because she didn't say she went fishing. I think she said she shot some fish, and she's holding
a harpoon. It's like crossbow fishing or something is what she said.
She has a harpoon gun, and she's like, we know she's good at shooting things in the throat because, you know, Anacreon huntress, and those fish were neatly shot in the throat. So I'm gonna I imagine she's standing on the boat shooting.
Just shooting into the water.
Yeah. Those fish do look delicious, though. I'm kind of hungry. And also, once again, my friend Josh pointed it out that Silver is like, show me how to open the Prime Radiant. Like, you've already done it. I'm going to chalk that up to she's just like trying to bond with the person. You know, like how sometimes, like, when you're trying to like impress or ingratiate yourself to a person, you're like, oh, show me how, like, and I can do this, but, you know, like, I'm bad at it. Like, show me how you do it, you know. She's doing that, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
She has like a little of a mom crush on Gale, you know. I mean, she only done it once out from like a vision. She doesn't really know like the mechanics of it, I guess.
I will say I do like the way their relationship is set up, that like Gale is still just totally freaked out by everything, like doesn't understand what's happening, doesn't know what to make of Salvor. And Salvor like went to Gale looking for answers, thinking that, you know, she would complete her or whatever. I like that dynamic. And I like that she's like, look, we've only known each other for a day. What the fuck? You know, I dig that. And I liked, I would like to see how that plays out forward going forward. I think
completely
that's completely
fine. Yeah. 100% completely on board. I really like it. I don't understand why Gale yelled, "Don't touch me."
I don't know. I guess she doesn't like to be touched. I don't know.
Like, yeah, you nearly just drowned. I don't know. I don't know. I was like, Gil, like, settle down a bit, you know? also, that little holding breath back and forth thing.
Making out underwater.
Would that work? Don't we exhale carbon monoxide?
Yeah. You would still have a little bit of oxygen in there, but not enough to like pass your breath on to somebody else. That's kind of not how it works. Yeah.
And also like that wouldn't Selma was already passed out. That wouldn't immediately revive her.
Yeah. And it was so goofy. Like, it was like Selma, a video like, game wakes mechanic. Up and then Gale passes out. You know, it's like, what just happened?
Yeah. It's like oxygen as a measurable video game mechanic, not like how it actually works in real life.
I will say, I just recently learned something in the real world that actually like made me appreciate the whole Gale being able to breathe underwater better. There's this like group of sea nomads. I don't know how to pronounce it because I'm not Southeast Asian, but they have adapted over generations to be able to breathe under and hold their breath underwater for like six or 7 minutes. And like normal people like you and me can't do that. Yeah. So I think that's kind of cool that if you grew up on a water planet like Synax and you'd been there for generations, you would have increased lung capacity. You could hold your breath longer, and Salvor might not have that ability because she's only half Synaxian. So yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I am Southeast Asian, but I still don't know how to pronounce it, but I will attempt it. Bajau Sea Nomads.
Sure.
Do you know where in Southeast Asia they're from?
No, Southeast Asia is not just one place.
You motherfucker. I cannot believe you've done this. With that, let's move on to before that, the deviation with the Prime Radiance. Why, if the first crisis got solved, why is it still severely
Well, I have a theory about that, and I think it's just because Salvor left.
Does the Prime Radiance have the internet? Is
it good point?
Who's making the input there? Like, is she like, I'm just gonna call the Prime Radiance she now because it's alive. Is she taking into account all the shit that's happening? Does she know what's happening with the Cleons and the genetic industry?
Any of that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, like, it. I know I try not to talk too much about the books, but this really like bugs the book reader in me because like in the books, psychohistory is all about like setting up socioeconomic conditions and things like that. Like just setting things in motion that cannot be easily undone. Like it like solving the crisis isn't so much whether or not they solve a puzzle as it's just inevitable. This is how it has to play out. There's no other way this can play out. The show has already gone fast and loose with that idea, but this is taking it to a whole different level and saying that like something changed and now we could have crises off into infinity. And it's not something that's supposed to be happening right now. That's what I'll say.
And also, they're just describing life. That's how life works.
That's life. Yeah. What's the fucking point of psychohistory then?
Like, something bad will happen. Yeah. Like in life.
Yeah. If you don't do something, bad shit happens and bad shit will keep happening until you fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then a different bad shit will happen and you're going to have to deal with that.
And then you'll die.
Yes. Yes. Until the, you know, you give the long good night.
Well, this took a turn.
Let's talk about I'm gonna keep going back to this fucking crisis thing. They solved the first crisis. Why why did the line diverge before the first crisis? The first crisis is supposed to be part of the plan. There are supposed to be multiple crises that is part of the plan. But on that map, the line already diverged from the ideal course that human history is supposed to take. And the first crisis is after. That doesn't make any sense.
No, I agree. And also, I feel like the graphics that they used didn't match up exactly with the dialogue. Like, she's talking about that's the second crisis, like, we're looking at the same thing, like nothing has changed in what we're looking at. So I think the visual representation of what she was trying, or what the show is trying to tell you, wasn't very well done.
All right, now let's go to the Empire. Let's talk about Trendor's rings first, because they look cool.
They're badass.
At some point in the episode, they imply that Trendor rings are for launching payloads.
That doesn't make any sense, because you got to get them into the ring before you load them into space.
Yeah.
Like, a space elevator makes sense because it's connected to the ground. These are just rings.
Yes. Yeah. So the queen was completely right. Like, this is just this is just frills. Like, it would make sense as a defense platform.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I understand why they wouldn't want to rebuild the space elevator for it to just come crashing down again. But why not both? Why not three space rings, and at the two points where the three space ring connects, two space elevators?
Right.
On the opposing poles.
That would make perfect sense. And maybe they do have something like that and we just didn't see it. But I feel like we would have seen that.
Looks cool, though.
Really, really cool. I'm willing to take away any logic problems with it just because it looks really cool.
I know, and it's been like 130 years, but I still don't buy that.
To build that. I still don't buy that.
Okay, let's start by talking about the elephant in the motherfucking room.
Are you talking about Day's big swinging manhood?
No, I meant motherfucking literally. I'm talking about Day fucking Damrosel.
There you go. Yeah.
By the way, this is an explicit show. Okay.
That ship has sailed.
Seems like massively like a bad idea. When the sex thing started, I'm like, oh, Day's so that's where we're going. And then I'm like, oh, I think that's probably Damrosel, right? Like, immediately my mind's like, oh, okay, that's icky, sure.
Cleon's always been a robosexual.
Let's just talk about this relationship in the first place, like because we get more context later. I think it's going to be very important that they pointed out that Damrosel initiated this sexual relationship.
They pointed it out on
multiple occasions.
Dusk, like, gives a very modern explanation of why this is wrong, saying that the power dynamic is a problem. Which surprised me that that's going to show up in Foundation when you're talking about the Emperor. But,
I think that goes both ways, right? Because I think, like, I justified it because he's clearly not just talking about, like a Me Too thing. I think about, like
how much power we're supposed to take it like too. That. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Like, I think he's talking about both ways and how it will affect the power dynamic. Like, I don't think he's saying it's morally wrong. I think he's saying the power dynamic is wrong. Like, you have to take into account the power dynamic because this is going to fuck up the way we rule.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Also, like, we've talked about the ambiguity of Demerzel's programming, that, like, she has to do everything in her power to protect Empire. What exactly does that mean? I mean, does it mean that this Day is not actually Empire anymore because he doesn't have the same genetic code anymore? Or is Empire just like the Empire? Or is it that he's the figurehead of the Empire, therefore she has to protect him? Like, none of that's been answered yet. That's still all up in the air.
Yeah. He's already telling her not to call him Empire in the boudoir. Yeah. He's already telling her to call him Cleon.
And not use fake voices. Yeah.
What? I mean, look, I had a problem with that thing. I thought she was like, she like when he said it, we haven't seen Demrazel result yet. So I thought he was like, I thought she had like some sort of shape-shifting like camouflage on or whatever, if she's like in character as somebody else. He just means she's using a sexy voice. You guys are fucking. She's allowed to use a sexy voice.
Yeah, I think that was just the show screwing with us.
Yeah.
More than
normal humans do that. Normal humans do that, okay? Yes. There is a special come hither voice for a reason. I guess he just liked the mummy robot voice.
Hey, don't king shame. Don't yuck his yum.
I laughed so hard when she immediately reverted back to like, yes, Empire. I'm like, no, I get it. That is her. Hey, I always maintain that Rosal was sexy. It's about time Cleon caught up to it. I also like his justification. He's like, the first Cleon get to enjoy her company in that way. Why shouldn't I?
Right.
And the Dusk is like, maybe because she changed your diapers. But yeah, like,
I also like so when Dusk is like, you got to think about your position, and he says, well, she liked my position.
Yeah, I like the change on this day. We'll get to that later. But obviously, Demrazel is, this is a ploy of some sort, right? This is either a ploy to gain more power, to get him in more under his control or whatever, right? Like, they wouldn't point out the fact that she initiated it otherwise.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. This is her way of getting more control. Yeah. I think that's obvious. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So the naked fight scene. It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Like, there's a little bit too much cutting, but I can understand why you have to do that when somebody's naked. And, you know, you're trying not to show everything. It's not like Viggo Mortensen in that one movie.
History of Violence, right?
History of Violence. Yeah. No, it's good. And like, I feel like the choreography was a step up a little bit. Like, some of the fight scenes in the Invictus in season one were really choppy. Like, they made this look like it was more smooth. Like, I feel like this is a little better. Yeah. It's not perfect. It's still not like a kick-ass hallway fight from a Marvel show or something, but it's good.
I still really liked it. Yeah, it's a huge improvement. When he picked up that flaming thing, brazier and used it as a shield, it was good. And I immediately, like, the character building in this thing is really good. When he's like cocky and started smirking,
like,
oh, okay, this is a different day. Like, that genetic, the genetic divergence from the original has really taken hold in the last 130 years. Like, this is a different day. This guy's a bit of a cocky dick, and I like it.
I also like some of the choreography in that, like, it wasn't a clean fight. Like, he slips on blood at one point, and it, like, turns the tide of the fight. Stuff like that is good, because it's not... It doesn't feel like a fully choreographed fight. It feels like a natural brawl, you know?
Yes.
So that's cool.
And also he's allowed to be cocky because he knew about his aura. But at the same time, I think he should know that assassins wouldn't be in his room if they don't have a way around his aura.
Right. They all know about his aura, right?
I want to take to task these elite, unbeatable, untraceable, no eyes assassin. It's, they brought shotguns to the assassination. they're everywhere because they brought poison blades, but blades, not like poison darts, but shotguns. And also, that guy missed for no reason. That guy came around the corner, pointed his shotgun at the thingy, and then he clipped him in the shoulder. What the fuck? They were like 8 feet apart. Come on. Some elite assassin. Even the Swordstrom, yes, they were poisoned, and he would have died if it wasn't for a quick medical intervention by Demrazel. But still, it's not a lethal blow. You know?
It feels kind of sloppy in a show where there's so much technology and so many ways around just barging into somebody's room with poison swords and shotguns. It feels low tech, you know?
Yeah, but this turned my little conspiratorial brains. What if they were only supposed to scare him? What if they weren't supposed to successfully kill him? What if it was Demrazel? What if this is another ploy by her to ingratiate herself further to the day she's fucking and put another wedge between him and dusk and dawn?
It's
if
possible.
Devrozel is going
she also
for
is
control,
the one who told him to open his eyes just as they walked in. So yeah.
Yes. Yes. This is true.
No, I don't think that's a crazy theory, like, at all. I think that makes sense.
What if
50-50 on whether or not it's actually true, but I don't think it's crazy.
Yeah. What if like she was supposed to just save him, you know, like exactly the same way she did, and it was supposed to be good, you know? Like, because she did the big flip, like big showy flip thing to block him from the sword stroke, which I mean she would have done anyway. That is her job. But still, I think this is more likely to be arranged by Damrosor rather than Day or Dawn.
Right. Sorry, Dawn or Dusk. Dusk or Dawn. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought she looked really, really cool with like her half her head cut off and she's like bleeding this weird metallic goo everywhere. And she basically kills a guy by stabbing him through the heart with her hand, which I think is just really cool.
That was anime as fuck, by the way. This whole fight scene was anime as fuck.
Yes, absolutely. But that's why I love it. And he like falls on the floor at one point. He looks to his left and he just sees her like half a head sitting there.
Yeah.
<That's> so cool.
Yeah, that's straight out of Ghost in the Shell.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure the hand in the chest thing by a robot is also in Ghost in the Shell.
Probably.
Before I realized he got poisoned, I thought the scene was going to end with them continuing fucking in the aftermath of the day. I thought it was supposed to show the decadence of the new day, which let's talk about this new bad boy day.
I love him. I am.
He's a lot more paranoid.
He is more paranoid, but he's also more cocky at the same time. Like,
yeah,
in every way. I love that he does it a couple of times. He just like winks really quickly, really subtly.
Yeah.
It's done so well, so naturally.
And
yet he's constantly smirking, even if there's nothing worth smirking about. I don't know. And some of the line delivery, he has some great lines in this episode, like utter the word rest and I'll have you killed. I love that.
and I really want to give props to the guy who played the doctor as well, though. Like he played the resigned face of a doctor who's like, he will get me killed. Like he played like that's the face of doctors when you know you can't. Your patient won't do what they need.
Day is sitting there screaming as the doctor is curing him. Day is sitting there screaming, I don't know if you guys are probably in on it. And he's just like, yeah, we're probably in on it, whatever.
Just take your robot leeches.
That's creepy.
Out of the ones rest and I'll have you kill. Fun. Get me my rope so my manhood isn't flopping around. And then he winks to Dawn. Perfect.
It's so great. I really love this day. This is my favorite day so far.
Just when you thought Lee Pace couldn't get any better.
Oh, this is great.
So we should point out this is the 17th Cleon.
Correct. And the last one we saw was the 12th. So we're so many generations that we're not seeing characters we've seen before. These are all new Dusk Dawn.
So 13th was the one that got his neck snapped by Demrazel. That's why there's a later line that says 13th, new fear.
Oh, Cleon 13th, new fear. Good. Yeah.
I think that was because he said the previous dawn, the previous days never felt fear, and the previous Cleons didn't feel fear, and he said the Cleon 13th knew fear, which is said by Dawn, and I was wondering if that was supposed to be like a bit of a subtle warning, being like, hey, stop paling up with Damrosor. Remember what happened to 13?
Right. Like, don't think with that manhood.
Just visit the whole garden. This is the fuck garden.
Just like any normal Cleon.
Okay, so yes, we talked about the assassination. What about this marriage plot? Going into the marriage plot, that conversation between Dawn and Day about previous Cleons feeling like they are immortal, like they don't like they care more about them as a unit, as an empire, instead of them individual beings, because they know when they die, the next Cleon will take the space, like identical Cleon. I'm like, that's still kind of stupid. You're still dead.
Yeah, I mean, you've always, whether you're a clone or not, you are your own individual. You always have been. Like, that's,
yeah,
it's not a thing.
I get what they're kind of saying about, like, soul. Like the original uncorrupted Cleons have the confidence of feeling like one soul.
Right.
But they also, whole show does this with the Cleon dynasty. And I forgive it because it leads to fun storyline. They're really, really discounting nature and experiences versus nature.
Well, absolutely. Like, and I think that's
Cleons
one of the reasons
wouldn't be the same.
That's one of the reasons they try to have the same upbringing. I mean, but of course, yes. Environmental factors, things are always going to be different, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But whatever. Yeah. Like you said, since it's got so many good storytelling possibilities, I'm willing to go with it.
Exactly. That's why I've been doing
it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I get the setup. I get the setup that he wants to marry in and like and essentially end the genetic dynasty, because if he has a kid, like
that would end it, yeah.
Like, they haven't said it, but like that's what Dusk and Dawn is fearful of, definitely. If he has a kid, that the genetic dynasty will, the empire will be passed down that bloodline again.
Yeah, Dawn does say something about having children and like how that's not a good idea. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm curious.
Where Day wants it because like it is a different kind of genetic immortality that will be his own.
Right, right. Exactly. The kind of genetic immortality we all try to have sometimes.
I don't care. My genetics are terrible. This whole thing is held together by sheer will and good faith. And a healthy amount of alcohol.
Well, that just keeps you fresh. I'm really curious about this whole Dominion thing. For one thing, I can't not think of Deep Space Nine. And when he's talking about marrying the queen of the Dominion, like I'm picturing the Dominion mother, and it's just like, that's gross. I don't understand, like we've devolved so far in the Galactic Empire that he has to have a political marriage with another force to strengthen the Empire. So that means that there's some other force out there that could compete with the Empire. And it's this Dominion, whatever the hell it is. And it's implied that this queen just rose to power and probably, you know, saw to it that the accident that gave her the crown was, she somehow, her machinations got her the crown, which, you know, that's the way it always works. So I'm really curious about all of that. I want to know more about this Dominion. Where the fuck did it come from? What is this? And I mean, it makes sense from the story point of view, the Empire declining and other forces having to come in, and you know, it all makes sense. I want to know more.
Well, I always thought the Empire was by and far the largest empire in the galaxy, but not the only one.
Well, I mean, you get the impression from the first season, the very beginning, like where we start the story, that the Empire has taken control of the entire galaxy, but is starting to lose grip on certain things like Anacreon and Thespis, and they're becoming more independent. And maybe that's just because I read the books and that's where the books start. So like, maybe I'm just getting it mixed in.
Well, because at the end of season one, they also mentioned the Galactic Council, remember?
That's true.
So in my head, the Empire is like super America. That's like the superpower who actually have the kind of power America think they have sometimes. You know, who is majority.
What are you talking about? You mean the power that we do have?
Slowly losing that soft power, buddy. I don't know how many more Donald Trumps you guys can survive. Yeah, like I figured the Empire is like majority of the galaxy, but maybe not all of them. And maybe Galactic Council is more the equivalent of the UN, other smaller empire, that smaller, you know, galactic republics or empires or whatever they call it, which in a vacuum by themselves would not hold a threat or not hold a candle to the Empire, but maybe all together, maybe even if they don't rival it, they could at least have some kind of bargaining power, leverage, negotiation power, and maybe the Dominion is part one of those.
Okay, Yeah, I mean that squares with some of the politics from the books, so I'm willing to go with it. Yeah.
Because the way they talked about the Galactic Council at the end of season one as well, he was like, oh, we can't show weakness to the Galactic Council. Like, if the Galactic Council hear about it, there will be trouble. So I presume that's a kind of the dynamic. Like, another thing that could be is the Galactic Council could kind of be like a Senate thing, or like a council of like regional governors that rule systems under Cleon. But I think with the revelation of Dominion as a separate government, I think the Galactic Council kind of being the UN equivalent is more likely, in my opinion.
I mean, the whole thing is based on, you know, classic Rome, and, you know, Rome had been a colonial power and had conquered, you know, most of Europe, and had decided that these nations would become more like vassal states, and that's kind of how the Galactic Empire was set up, at least in the books, that like there are these other kingdoms, but they still are answerable to Empire. They basically can run their own business and stuff, but like they are vassal states and they still work for Empire.
This queen does not act like she's answerable to
she's smarmy as fuck. Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I don't know if I like her yet. Like, I know she's, I mean, I think Cleon has immediately taken a liking to her, because people don't talk to Cleon like that. Cleon like her, like his little dog mummies, clearly.
Oh yeah, he was enjoying it. Like, she was berating him and he was like grinning from ear to ear. He was loving it.
Yeah. 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 On his blue body armor and frilly skirt. It doesn't show how frilly it is until he sit down, isn't it? It is a lot of frills.
It is very frilly, yeah.
But yeah, what do you think about the queen? The queen entourage. Let's talk about the queen's entourage. Yeah,
we both had the exact same thought when the queen's entourage is coming in, and they're like all in like white robes, like whirling dervishes spinning around with their arms out. It looks like the Beauxbatons from Harry Potter. It's exactly the same, only, you know, the robes are a different color. It's like, that's all I could think of, and apparently that's what you thought of too. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I think of the Queen and the Dominion yet. I think we just got to spend more time with them and learn more about them to really get a read.
Yeah. But do you think, does it look like Dusk has immediately fallen forever?
Well, she gave him all the colors. He was so happy to have all those colors on that mural that doesn't exist anymore.
Well, I think they're going to bring it back.
They'll have to rebuild it. Yeah, of course. If they already have, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, since the last 130 years, I bet, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm excited to know, find out more about this queen and the whole thing. And I wonder. Look, I'm already putting as headcanon since the end of last season that Damrazel has a secret plot. So I'm just going to keep going on with my theory until I'm proven wrong.
And I will just keep nodding silently when you say that.
I wonder if Damrazel's secret blood is pro, like, is it pro marriage? Is this part of her plan or anti? I'm leaning towards pro. I think her plan is to prevent the corruption of the empire, because the dream itself is the empire. Like, Cleon did the genetic dynasty because he wanted the empire to run forever. But at the same time, it could also be the opposite. She could also be ingratiating herself sexually to Day to throw a spoke into this marriage thing, because maybe she think a Cleon should always be on the throne. It could go either way.
I don't want to say anything, but yes, I like your thinking properly, I think.
Okay. okay. All right. I don't think there's much else to talk about this queen. We've barely been given anything else.
No, I like where this. I like the idea of this storyline, and I want to see it develop. So yeah,
I like the idea that they grew to power, making like movable paint, like paint pigments that can move. I'm like, yeah, all right, man.
Sure,
whatever. They are get you going, man. Millionaire now, so. Damrazel find out about last season's plot thread. What's really funny to me is Damrazel bursting into that meeting, being like, "I need to talk to you right now." I'm like, "No, you don't. No, you don't.
You like, can totally wait. This has been waiting for 138 years. Yeah. Yeah. This is not the urgent business.
The Foundation and the Invictus isn't going to attack right now. So that's another thing.
Especially when as she gives her presentation, she even she counsels restraint, as Dusk puts it. What is so urgent then?
It could just be the writers trying to introduce a dramatic transition. But yeah. B, I also wonder if this is Demrazel is putting on a show. Saying in front of the queen being like, hey, I am also a power behind the throne. Even when the Empire says, give me a direct comment saying, oh, you can say in front of her, I can say no. Like, I overrule, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, I can see that totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also when they walk away, it's the camera stops on Dawn, very awkward, okay, I guess I'll go too. I like that. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. I also find it very funny that Day is you can say whatever you want, what you need to say in front of your future empress. I'm like, no, she can't. You know she can't. Your assassination.
You also keep saying over and over again throughout this entire episode, you haven't committed to this marriage yet. So
yeah,
what are you talking about?
And also you keep saying other people can't find out about the assassination, least of all the future queen. If she has news about your fucking assassination?
Which is more likely than what she actually has.
So that corpse has been floating around space for 100 odd years? Is that what the show was saying?
That's what they're saying. And somehow
how did they say drifted
into Empire space? I don't know. I have no idea.
That's probably a wrong way to go, even in 100 years.
I can kind of figure out maybe a trade ship picked up this corpse or found it on their scanners or something, and then it brought it to the Empire's attention. I can kind of retcon an excuse. But yeah, the idea that he's just been drifting for 138 years, he wouldn't have gotten very far. He wouldn't have gotten all the way to the center of a galaxy in 138 years. Dude's not going the speed of
light. What they're implying is they just drifted into region of space where they have relays, you know?
Yeah.
They have sensors again, which something picked the edge up. Of space doesn't. Right. I love the 3 seconds cameo by Anacreon Huntress. 3 seconds of her being 3 seconds of her being a complete dick.
Just screaming into the void.
Even your last kicking him in the face.
Action is weak.
And that wasn't weak at all, actually. That was very strong.
Apparently
he
worked.
Was actually doing his duty. Yeah, he was doing his duty until the very end. I also find it funny that they're still doing that mega flare shit. And also, I find it funny that they're like, oh, there was a mega flare. We lost the outer rim. Should we go check? Nah.
And apparently in this one, they can just do a spectral analysis and be like, yeah, that wasn't actually a mega flare. You couldn't have done that first time?
Before? Yeah. Yeah. But I understand, there was a pretty big deal for you guys to suddenly find out that Cleons were corrupted, but you know, even if you took a few years to come to terms with that, you couldn't set aside a week to chase this threat.
I mean, you can delegate, you know, you have a lot of underlings.
That's literally 3 of you. Granted, you just snap one snack, I guess, so maybe.
Well, the other one we brought up to speed in a day, right?
Yeah. Okay, so apparently when the cat is away, the mice will play, because Terminus and the Foundation has been booming.
Right, they now control multiple planets, and you see a bunch of them on this scanning thing, including Smyrna, which I thought was the stand-in for Thespis. I thought Thespis was a stand-in for Smyrna, but no, apparently Smyrna is a thing. So is
sounds like a planet from Futurama.
It totally does. It's there's a fine line in science fiction between sounding like a real place and sounding like a bunch of letters squished together. And speaking of which, the other planets that you see are Darabo, Glyptal 4, Anacreon, Corel, and Sawenna. Now, a couple of those are actually familiar to me other than Anacreon, but I'm not going to tell you which ones.
Oh, it's Smyrna, isn't it?
Well, yeah, Smyrna. I've already told you Smyrna's from the books.
We barely got anything with the foundation storyline in this episode, so we don't know how good it will be yet.
You met the new warden.
New warden, yeah.
Played by the guy from Fight Club. He's not Robert Paulson, but he's the guy who says his name is Robert Paulson. That guy.
Yes. Yes. He aged gracefully.
Yeah, he looks good.
Yeah. That Terminus look good. Foundations, like, you know, I don't know. I know book readers weren't satisfied with how the Foundation was portrayed in the last season, but I was like, for what, how many times have passed on a hostile planet colonizing it? I think the state of the Foundation last season makes sense. Now that they have more resources and more planets, the state of the Foundation now seem to have made more sense. Maybe I want them to be a little bit more advanced, but it seems to me that Foundation is a bit like, it's a bit of like a cult, like it's a, like a religious organization, you know.
I
don't feel like they would go in for
that basically. She says like there are rumors of magicians and they have this, some weird religion about a galactic spirit, and
So it makes sense to me, like their city is still built like a cult compound.
Yeah, no, that's entirely accurate to the books. The only thing that's not accurate to the books is the fact that they have their own military. Terminus is not supposed to have its own military. That's like a huge plot point in the books, but I'm willing to overlook it because that's kind of janky to try to set up this one planet in the middle of the Outer Rim without any kind of military. So I'm willing to.
Well, now there are several planets. A couple of things I noticed. They just parked that fucking Invictus in front of the planet. I'm like, come on, man. You stole that. Hide it a little bit.
I do find it interesting that, like, the Empire just figured out that the Foundation was still there, and immediately they already know all these other planets are part of the Foundation now. Like, their intelligence network must work real fast.
Which makes it really stupid that they didn't look into it before in the previous 138 years.
I know, right?
I know they just need to, like, I know we have to move it along. We can't really drag it out, so I forgive it. But it's still pretty
funny. About this episode are... that are acceptable because I actually like that they're moving fast through a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. So yes. It's that Star Wars bullshit, right? Like everybody has forgotten what Jedi's were in 20 years, except everybody
I'm not
going to
forgive that
secretly. Yeah. it's kind of like
that's
that.
Stupid.
Also, did you notice that the vault is no longer floating? Like,
Was it on the ground? I didn't notice. No.
Yeah, it's on the ground. It's in fact like the bottom of it is kind of buried.
Well, that's how it landed at the end of the first season. I guess it just never went back up.
Yeah, I feel like this is partially for CGI reasons. Now they can just have a vault set that they don't have to shush off with PGI every CGI every time. but yeah, they said the vault is opening. No, it isn't. The vault is being the 20th Century Fox Searchlight.
Yeah, this was nothing like what it looked like the first time the vault opened. I don't know how how did they put up sensors and alarms? Like, how do they know what the vault opening is gonna be like? Like, this is nothing like what happened 138 years ago.
I mean, like, sure, but the like suddenly it's shining a big light into the sky does seem to indicate it's doing something, I guess.
Yeah.
But I like how immediately they like, what? They want what? It want what? The vault's at what? I'm like, I think you guys want war, guys. The vault said blue light in the sky.
It must be war. What else could it possibly mean?
Typical religion.
Oh, I want to talk about the book so bad right now, but I'm not going to.
So rumors of magicians and a galactic spirit. We're supposed to think it's just supposed to be Harry's ghost, but I mean, the galactic spirit is quite clearly a reference to Harry's hologram. But if what they're saying is wrong, we're definitely supposed to think that is Harry's hologram. Eric is pulling faces.
Sorry.
For listeners.
I'm trying not to give anything away. Poker face. I'm terrible at poker, by the way.
But like the way it's delivered, we're supposed to think it's in reference to Harry. But if you really think about it, since the vault closed since end of season one, it's not supposed to be open yet. They straight up say it at the end of this episode. So, yeah, rumors and like stories about what happened when the vault opened would be still linger, but this could be referencing other things. This could be referencing other people, other major figures in the foundations, which are maybe magicians and galactic spirits with the power of flight.
We did see those the weird power flight
unassisted
spacey things, that's what they said. Spacer things in the previews.
Oh yeah, but the, those guys are in zero gravity.
Yeah.
<They don't fly>. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to meeting these magicians and collective spirits and stuff.
Me too.
Okay, well, I think that's all we have in this episode. Do you have any theories on whatever before we wrap it up? Not much to theorize on yet, except my complete paranoia that Damrozel is up to shit.
I do think the vault is opening, and I do think we're going to see that other Harry the hologram. And it's going to be a bit of a bombshell, because what he's going to say is not going to quite match up with where things are. At least that's the way it seems to have been set up.
Okay, can we call him Vault Harry, and can Vault we call Harry? The Yeah, can we call the other Harry, Harry the hologram? So just so we can differentiate from the two Harrys.
Okay, sure. Vault Harry and Harry the hologram. Got it.
Yeah, because this episode also makes it clear that they're two distinctive entities now.
Yeah, like, which we already knew, but like this episode really like, you know.
Spell it out. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And also like they seem to be like dressing Harry the hologram in white, and Vault Harry seem to be in a black suit most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
So I wonder if it is white hat, black hat bullshit.
I don't know. I think with Harry, it's all black hat. He's always got plans within plans.
Plan within plans. And, oh, all the plans are dick moves.
Yes.
Anyway, I can't speak for you, but I'm excited about the rest of the
season. I am excited. I gave this episode a lot of shit, but I am definitely very excited. This didn't dull my enthusiasm for the show at all. So...
All right, well, then we'll be back next week to talk about the next episode. As we mentioned before, you can send us emails at the streaming heap at outlook.com and leave us a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Until next time, this has been the Streaming Heap, and I've been Lynn.
And I've been Eric, and respect and enjoy the peace.
Goodbye.
Bye.
You wanted to know if I wanted to do an escape room. In
your life an hour is an escape half. Room.
Oh shit! That's so true. Oh, what's happening with your lights, man?
My power is flickering.
Harry Seldon's coming for you.
Hold on a second.
Uh oh,
I got my phone plugged in.
You completely froze.
Am I not here? Shit. Am I gone?
Oh, you're back. You're back. Okay.
Power keeps flickering.
Oh no. I can see that. I can see it flip clean. Harry Seldon's coming for you.
It's a reckoning. Whoa, Jesus Christ.
What happened?
Just the light. You didn't hear that? You didn't hear the thunder?
Oh, okay.
It's fine. Everything's fine. Sorry. Go back to what you were saying.
Hey, I always maintained that Rosal was sexy. It's about time Cleon caught up to it.